Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. I am out of town this week, and so I am very glad to have Alex Amorosi hosting a few programs this week, along with Nightlight alumni Alexander Tranström. I think that you will find the content that they provide really interesting. They're following some familiar formats that I use in most of my content in terms of exploring archetypes. And so today, Alex will be doing a talk on Mercury's journey through the sign of Aries. It is doing a big, long retrograde with three separate conjunctions to Chiron in Aries that he is going to be talking about, a subject that really is, I know, important to him, and something that's important also because the upcoming solar eclipse is happening in a conjunction with Chiron in Aries. So he's going to be exploring this upcoming Mercury retrograde in Aries with three conjunctions to Chiron. I hope you will enjoy it. There are a couple of things that I'm promoting today before introducing his talk, and I'm going to put those up on the screen right now. Of course, the first major thing that we are promoting is the speaker series. Putting this up on the screen right now. You can go to the speaker series tab and click on it on the website, nightlightastrology.com. And when you go there, you're going to find that we have a speaker. We had our first one this past weekend, two more speakers on the 24th and 30th. These are free. Dan Waits is giving a talk on Pluto in Aquarius, and Jolly Knott is giving a talk on the Lot of Fortune. So I think you guys will enjoy those talks. And also be sure under the events tab under live talks to check out. We just had our Neptune in Love talk. So we're moving into April, where we'll be talking about Uranus in the realm of love and relationships on April 18th. So you can register there. And then finally, under courses, first year course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic begins in June. I will be starting to promo that in the next few weeks, but you might want to check that out now. Early bird enrollment is there, and need-based tuition and stuff like that. That starts June 16th. The other thing that I am promoting today is Ashley's Herbal Apprenticeship Program. And that you can learn more about at skyhouseherbs.com. You click on the Herbal Apprenticeship page, the courses page, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship, to learn more about the program. It starts at the end of April, on April 24th. And right now there's an early bird enrollment sale. And then there are also need-based tuition spots available. We like to make sure that all of our programs offer flexible pricing for people so that nobody is priced out of studying something that really is sacred. So those are my promos for the day. I know that you guys will enjoy the content that I have this week lined up while I'm out of town. And they will be following the transits of the week, just like we normally do. I'm back with some content next week. Without further ado, Alex Amorosi today giving a talk on Chiron. Mercury in Aries conjoining Chiron. I hope you guys will enjoy it.
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Amorosi. I am in today for Adam Ellenboss, who is on vacation. He has given me the keys. He's given me the news desk. And God only knows where we're going. But I know where we're going. We are going to talk today a little bit about Mercury's retrograde in Aries and Mercury's interface with Chiron, three conjunctions with Chiron over the course of that retrograde cycle. So we'll get to that. But before I forget, if you're interested in learning more about Adam's work, you can go to www.nightlightastrology.com. You can get information on Adam's readings and classes there. Remember to do whatever feels right to you with the like button, because I didn't realize until I saw on Adam's Instagram that like there was some like button contest going on. So you do you, and whatever happens with the like button in you is your business. Remember to like and subscribe. You can also get information on Adam's wife, Ashley's herbal apprenticeship. She's a phenomenal herbalist at www.skyhouseherbs.com. If you're interested in my work, working with me or learning more about me, you can go to www.alexamorosi.com. There you can find all the information on my readings, my different services. I am not just an astrologer. I actually, for much longer than I've been an astrologer, I've been an intuit and energy worker and a yoga teacher as well. And I offer a service that's been very popular lately of combining my intuitive readings with astrology readings. So I kind of, we look at your chart and then I tell you about my hits, and then we look at your chart and I tell you about my hits, and we kind of go back and forth between the two. It can be really, really powerful. And just a lot of fun detective work. Okay, so today we're going to talk about Chiron. Chiron is a planetoid that orbits between Saturn and Uranus. It was discovered in the 70s, and it has about a 50-year orbital cycle. And I use in my readings, I use the Hellenistic system in my readings for the chart construction, whole sign houses, and the ancient rulerships. But I also use asteroids and Chiron, not all the time, but when there's a significant transit, there's a significant conjunction, there's a repeated square or hard aspect, I will definitely take a look at it because I think that those points can add some specificity to the reading. Though I tend to use mostly, the planets and Pluto, and the nodes. But Chiron is very, very activated over the course of the next 6 weeks. Chiron is intimately tied to the April 8th solar eclipse, which is happening at 19 degrees of Aries, where Chiron will be. And it's actually the thing that really struck me is how powerful it would be, is it's to the minute conjunct. So the sun, the moon, and Chiron will all be at 1924 of Aries during the eclipse. That's a pretty rare and powerful event. The sun will conjunct Chiron every year. The moon obviously conjuncts Chiron every month. But there's to have all three on an eclipse right next to the North Node, Mercury retrograding back into the mix, Mars coming into a conjunction with Saturn and Pisces at the same time. There's a lot baked into this. That's one of the reasons that I think you're going to hear a lot about this eclipse. It's not just because it's a total solar eclipse, but there are a lot of moving parts in and around of and related to this eclipse. So the Mercury retrograde point of view we're going to take today is just a couple of things you might look for with Chiron. Mercury and Chiron together will work in Aries there too. And we'll look at some things to watch for. I find the best way to learn astrology is to know what transits are happening and be observant to yourself and observant of your life and see what's going on. And then as you're taking note of that, you start to notice the correlations. And it can be a very, very powerful way to sort of internalize and humanize the transits because it can be very easy to say, like, oh, it's the language of the stars, but it's talking about very human things. So let's bring up the chart. Let's look at Mercury's first conjunction. So you'll see I've made an equinox video while Adam's away too that you'll see that I've made. And so I talk a little bit about this in that video as well. But right around the equinox, just as the sun moves into Aries, here's Mercury at 17 degrees Aries. Here's Chiron at 18 degrees Aries. Mercury's moving into conjunction, passes that conjunction around March 20th. Now Mercury's going to dance all the way up to 27 Aries. And then you'll see the station retrograde. And now Mercury is moving back and back. And here's Mercury starting to make its conjunction with the Sun, the Kazemi moment. So that's around April 11th. And then Mercury is now moving back into conjunction with Chiron at 19 of Aries. And that's about April 15th. Then Mercury is going to get all the way back to 15 and change of Aries, where it will. God love him, is going to station. Wait, did I miss that? I missed the station. Sorry. Go back. Wait, there you go. So here's Mercury stationing at 15. Just barely gets back to 15 Aries, 15, 59 Aries. And then Mercury starts to go forward and makes its last conjunction with Chiron and Aries by May 5th. And then Mercury will move into Taurus on May 15th. So three big conjunctions, and particularly strong, I think, is that Kazemi moment with the sun and then Mercury wedged between the sun and Chiron just after the exalted sun has been eclipsed. I'm not going to get into all of that today. I'm going to stay mostly with Mercury and Chiron. You're going to see a lot of content on this eclipse. No matter what astrology content you follow, you're going to see a lot of content on that. And so I'm going to stick more with Mercury and Chiron today, a little bit about the archetype of Chiron as I've come to understand it in practice. And in my life, Chiron actually is directly conjunct my midheaven. And then we'll talk a little bit about some things you might notice or watch for or themes that are coming up very strongly. So Chiron generally has to do with a wound that doesn't quite heal. We have all, in some way, had what's called a core wound, something that was very deep from this lifetime or another, and has stayed with us. And sometimes that wound is something that we have to learn how to live with and relate to. We have to learn how to create a sense of meaning around it sometimes in order to relate to it. Sometimes we learn to create a more generative energy around the wound rather than a destructive energy around the wound. I mean, I know for myself, the trauma in the wound wounds that I have gone through have, you know, when I wasn't aware of them particularly, they run your life, and you don't even know that they're running your life. And so Chiron is about how we begin to learn to relate to, tend to, be tender with the wounds that we have, and then how we share what we've learned with others, which is a very, very important part of the archetype of Chiron. There's a wise teacher in Chiron. Chiron also was a teacher of philosophy and medicine, many other sort of, you know, Renaissance kind of arts. And, you know, was the teacher of Achilles too. And I talk a little bit about in the Equinox video, how, you know, he was a, as he learned to heal, he became sort of a wise mentor. Many of you know, I've said it on this channel before, one of my favorite movies is Good Will Hunting. And because I'm a native Bostonian, and I love the Boston-ness of it. But if you think of Robin Williams' character, Sean McGuire, in that movie, he's a very Chiron-type character. Someone who's, you know, helping Matt Damon learn how to contain and heal some of the stuff that's happened to him, how to channel his energy. This is a very Chiron Aries idea too, where he's helping him heal traumas and wounds from his past, but also helping him to focus his energy and not feel like his energy has control of him all the time. And Robin Williams, we know in that movie, is deeply wounded. I'm sorry if this is a spoiler, but if you haven't seen this movie, I don't, you need to reprioritize your life. I'm just saying. It's an amazing movie. But, you know, his wife, who he loved deeply, died of cancer. Robin Williams in the movie, his wife. And it's a very deep cut. You can see it in him. You can see how much it's affected him. And there's some healing that he goes through in this movie as well in order for him to be able to move on. But you can see it's something that will just be there. You know, however much healing he does, wherever he goes, moving on, new relationships, new places in life, it will just be there. And so learning how to relate to those wounds in a way where we can use them to help, we can use them to make help ourselves, to be generous for ourselves, and use them to be a teaching for others. And even sometimes, you know, what I think is interesting too is the methodologies that we learn while we're healing, sharing those as well. For instance, you know, in my whole healing process, a lot of what I do today, I do because I learned it when I was doing my healing process. You know, I did psychotherapy for many years. I'm not a psychotherapist, but in the process of doing therapy, I also did energy work. I got astrology readings. I had a whole bunch of stuff that I was doing that was helping me see into, heal, and reclaim aspects of myself that I felt I had lost. That's a big part of the archetype of Chiron. Now, Mercury, of course, complex archetypes that go with Mercury. Well, let's go with today's speech, communication, thought process, those sorts of ideas. And we're gonna take that and merge these two ideas together and bring a little bit of Aries into it as well. So I'm going to do tried and true nightlight style, five things to watch for with Mercury in interaction with Chiron. Speech that wounds versus speech that heals. Words, and I see this all the time as an energy worker, an energy practitioner. Words carry energy. Words not only carry the meaning we associate with them, the actual word carries a sort of frequency or an energy. And when we say sticks and stones can break my bones and words will never hurt me, that's not true. Words can be very harmful. In fact, words can really stick with us. The energy or the vibration of that word or the interaction with that word or what was said can stick with us for a very long time. When Mercury is coming into conjunction with Chiron and Aries, there may be a call for us to notice what wounds have harmed us, maybe what words we've used that have harmed others, and how we can then find speech and communication that would feel healing for that. Because the amends we make and communication can also carry an energy. And even if someone doesn't accept the amends, they're just not in a place where they can accept, you know, when we go to them and say like, hey, I really fucked up, I'm sorry. Just the act of making the amends, of being sincere about it, begins to change the energy of the words involved. It begins to change the frequency, so to speak, of the energetic interaction between us and another. And maybe when someone comes to us too, you know, sometimes people come to us and, you know, they realize, they're like, wow, I really screwed up. And sometimes we're ready to accept that. And sometimes we're not. You know, and they'll say, you know, a lot of times, I remember years ago when someone said to me, you know, I realized what I said really hurt you. And it did. And I wasn't ready to take the, you know, to reconcile at that point. But it did soften the energy around it quite a bit. And it did set me forth on a path where I was able to eventually move forward from that interaction. But I think that looking for how we're speaking, how we're thinking, how we're communicating, what we're putting into the world, is it healing or is it harmful? Aries communication often has to do with direct, incisive, Aries communication at its best, direct, incisive, mission-driven speech that works to rebalance something with a sense of fairness, a sense of justice, whether that's collective or internal or interpersonal. So you might look for that around this time as like, you know, someone coming to you and saying like, hey, I messed up. Or you really feeling like, you know what, I did not act with integrity in that conversation, or I said something in a blaze of anger that was mean or cruel, and I need to own up to that. And turning the wound into something that becomes generative and healing. And sometimes, you know, some of the most healing interactions we can have when something, a trust or something is really ruptured, and we're able to at least work towards a softening around that, if not a full reconciliation. Sometimes we can't work to full reconciliation, and that's okay. But in that process, we reclaim ourselves back from the past. And that's a huge, huge part of the archetype of Aries, is reclaiming back from the past. Now, let me take a sip of my cafe. All right. Next is, second thing to look for is reclaiming our voice from our wounds. There's a, one of my favorite movies is The King's Speech with Colin Firth. And I think it's Elena Bonham Carter plays his wife, the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth. And there's a, he's, it, it, if you haven't seen this, it's basically chronicling King George VI of England working with his speech coach, because he had a very profound stutter for much of his life. And there's a point where his coach gets him to such a place where he just screams, I have a voice. You can hear it. And it's all of a sudden, like, the resonance of his voice changes, it drops, it becomes lower, it becomes powerful, it becomes commanding, it's a very kind of Leo moment, or Aries and Leo share that, the exaltation and the rulership of the sun, right? That idea of sovereignty, the king, the queen, the ruler, the sovereign of a country or a place. And there's a reclamation that happens in that moment. I pull back from the wounds that they talk about in the movie. There's some of the wounds in his childhood. I pull back my voice to myself. I have a voice. I have something to say. This is Aries. I have something to speak. I have a point of view. I get to express that point of view. All Aries. That could also go too far, where it's like, I have something to say, and it's the only thing to say, and it's the right thing to say. I'm just saying, this is a fire sign. A lot of fire in my chart. Fire signs, we can, let's own up. We can be like that. Right. Oh man, I am a Sagittarius. I am just, it's not an opinion. It's a total fact. I just said it, and that makes it a fact. Anyways, so looking for that, reclaiming your voice, you know, as we do healing work, as we go on those journeys, as we work with others, we work within community, we work within our relationships, we can draw back to ourselves, our voice, our ability to express, our ability to have a point of view, our ability to state what is good for us or right for us and what is not. And that can be a very powerful, very, very powerful moment when that happens. You can feel it kind of like in that movie that drops, your voice suddenly becomes much more emphatic and powerful. Okay. Teaching from our wounds of self. One of the things that Chiron does in myth is he becomes a teacher. He's a teacher of arts that have, whether they affected him personally or not, they have a profound effect. They've not helped his healing or not. They've had a profound effect. Our wounds oftentimes create, fair or not, things we learn. Sometimes it's not fair or right that we had to learn them. And I don't always get, like, you know, I don't always subscribe to the idea of, like, you know, because this horrible thing happened, there was a meaning and it was to teach you how to teach it. I don't subscribe to that at all. Nevertheless, when things happen, and sometimes things happen, the meaning we make about it and our ability to share from that meaning can be very healing, a big part of the healing process. And so teaching from our wounds of self, you know, when I'm training yoga teachers, that's a big part of what I did and still do to some degree, was train yoga teachers for many, many years. And oftentimes in yoga classes, people will share from their experiences. And I always tell them, like, you're welcome to share as much as you'd like, or you are welcome to share as much as you would not like to share. But our experiences have value. And oftentimes when you can share to somebody's experience from your own, even if you don't communicate the exact thing that happened, right? Sometimes there are certain things that we want to keep private to ourselves, but what we learned from what we communicate, there's a transmutation of the energy in that interaction. The frequency of that energy shifts and it moves towards something where we can feel we're of service, we're giving, we're generous, and it's of assistance to others. And that can be really healing in of itself. We can't always get there right away, and I'm not sure we can always get there with everything. And it's okay if that's not where you are right now. But just knowing that, I found that, at least, I'll say from my own personal experience, I found that to be a very powerful idea. And I've shared the things that I've learned, right or wrong, whether I should have had to or not. And again, some things I think just happen. I'm not a subscriber to everything happens for a reason, especially the really bad stuff, but that there's something within that, right? Where it, for my healing, for me going forward with my life, me reclaiming Aries, it allows me to go forward. It allows me to feel like I'm healing. It allows me to feel like I'm able to be of service. It brings not only healing to others, but to myself. It can be very, very beautiful. Meaning making for our wounded self. This is number four. This is, it may be the same, but, you know, Chiron, the teacher of philosophy, the way we order things, the way we order the world, the way we order thought, the way we order things is very important as human beings. Whether you believe in a, I'm assuming if you're watching an astrology channel, you do not have the subscription to a random universe that just happened to come out of nowhere, that sort of thinking, but maybe you do. I don't know. And that's totally fine. But in some way, we're always making meaning as human beings. You know, you'll hear that all the time. We're meaning-making machines. And making meaning can be very helpful. You know, maybe we're all making meaning with all of this, right? We're making meaning out of the sky, out of the earth, out of ourselves. You know, I heard Jill Tarter, the famous scientist who is the movie Contact, where Jodie Foster's character is based on her. She said once on a podcast, it was so pithy and brilliant. She said, you know, as humans, we're just fascinated by ourselves. And it's so true, right? We're always so interested in us, you know, and the meaning we're making. And sometimes from our wounded self, the places that we know we've done work with, we've seen, we've understood, we've tended to, the parts around them that we've healed, the young parts of ourselves or the younger parts, but the parts that experienced it, there's some meaning we can make. There's a philosophy, a life philosophy that can come out of it. Now, one thing's interesting that with Chiron, and I see this often around the Chiron return, which happens for us around 49, 50. We can make meaning out of our wounds that causes us to shrink and retreat. Sometimes that happens. They're so overwhelming. It's like, I just shrink and retreat back into myself. Or we can make meaning that is generous and shares. I'm not giving a value judgment on either one. You know, in the work that I've done and what I've heard some people go through, I'm like, I am not going to offer judgment on how anyone handles their own internal state. That's kind of between, you know, between you and God. But the idea of knowing what kind of meaning we're making, and is this a meaning that's reclaiming, Aries, reclaiming, pulling back, drawing back from the past, That's a discernment that'll be really interesting around this time, especially as Mercury's making that pass on April 15th, the retrograde pass. That'll put that usually when Mercury's making the retrograde pass at a an aspect like that, that's when you're bringing up the stuff to be seen and discerned. Cool. All right. So now I sip a coffee. There we go. Saying no. Oh, number five, saying no, speaking up to unnecessary sacrifice. Chiron, when it's strong in the chart, often there's a very strong self-sacrificial quality to it, especially when we're not aware of the archetype at work. And there's a feeling of, it really doesn't matter what happens to me. I just think about others. I'm so, you know, sometimes, especially for those of us that are very empathically sensitive, I'm very empathically sensitive in a lot of ways, we can confuse compassion with empathic entanglement, where we're so involved in the experience of another that it's hard for us to locate ourselves in that interaction. And when we can step back, there's a sense of genuine compassion where I'm centered, rooted in myself, and I'm able to take action that is effective and helpful and necessary for what needs to be done in the service of another. When we say no to unnecessary sacrifice, because there's some necessary concessions and compromises and so forth that we go through in our adult lives particularly, there's a sense of, again, that reclaiming, where we say it's important that I stay centered in my sense of who I am and have an eye towards a mission or a drive towards the service of others. And when we get lost in that, when we get lost on that internal compass, then it's very hard to discern what is necessary and where we end and someone else begins. And remember that Mars will be in Pisces, ruling all of these planets during that time, which will maybe bring some of that soup to the surface of like, well, where exactly are the boundaries here? How much am I giving? Is it actually helpful? And maybe looking at, you know, is my speech and communication or my actions of my words, the actions of my words, the actions of my communication really helpful here? Am I centered in my own sense of self? And not in an egotistical way, because you can do that. Trust me, this could also go in the shadow side in an egotistical way. Like, I am centered in myself and I'm good. It doesn't really, I don't give a fuck what happens to anybody else. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is I have a sense of being inside myself. And let me put it this way. When I'm teaching people about energy work, and especially when they're doing altered states of consciousness in whatever way, you actually have to have a fairly strong, healthy ego to do that. You have to have a space to return to what you know feels like you. Because when you shift and change, when I do readings, right, when I'm sort of like in one space here and then communicating to my client here, I have to be very clear about where I am, what I'm seeing, and not getting too involved in it. That was a big thing that happened to me in my early career when I was doing intuitive work, because I would get so involved and drawn into the experience that I wouldn't know where I was. I would feel kind of disoriented. When we're stable and grounded in ourselves, then we're able to draw in. We're able to go more places when we're stable and grounded in ourselves. It's a little bit like having an internal lighthouse. I can go a little further from the shore when I know that there's a beacon on the shore that draws me back. I hope that makes sense. So that keeps us from a space of being unnecessarily sacrificial, because it's like I'm going out here, but I know where I am. I'm aware of things that could be helpful, or I'm also aware of where I'm trying to help, but it's actually not helpful. That could be something that happens with Chiron too. I'm really trying to help. My intentions are good, but it doesn't seem to wind up the way I thought it would. That could also happen too. I'm saying something I think should be helpful here, but it's actually having the opposite effect. When we're centering ourselves, more often than not, though we all mess it up sometimes, we speak from a place, we communicate from a place that is maybe not always comfortable, but more helpful. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is some Mercury and Chiron. And I like to do this to my chair, but I forgot I have a headrest on this new chair. It's just like going backwards. Anyways, I hope this was helpful, friends. I hope it was a helpful introduction to Chiron and some of the ideas you might see. It may be interesting for you to look at your chart if you don't know where it is already, to take a look, add the point to the chart, see where it is in your natal chart, see if you're having any major transits to Chiron, and you might notice some of these themes come up too, you know, with the combination of whatever planet the archetype is moving with Chiron. But yeah, this was really fun to do. I hope you have enjoyed, and we'll talk soon. Bye, everybody.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for sticking around. I'm really happy to be joined by my wife, Ashley, who is an herbalist. Hi, Ashley.
Hey.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be helping Ashley promote her upcoming program, which is something that you actually began teaching many years ago, this herbal apprenticeship program. I think it was what, 2011 or 12 that it got started, right?
Right. So it's been over 10 years I've been offering this course, and yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because some people on my channel, most people know you because you pop on here or there. We talk about herbs and astrology. There's an attraction in our marriage and an attraction in the subject matter that is old. Like we've been together for, 14 years in our relationship going on. And we've always had a fascination with each other's areas of expertise. And we've done lots of things to marry them together over the years, in addition to literally getting married. And and actually, herbalists and astrologers have married the subjects of herbs and planets together for thousands of years as well. Now, your program is focused on, herbalism. It's not an astrology course, but there is certainly a lot of overlap in terms of the energetics and the spiritual approach to herbalism that you take. And so I was hoping that we could start off just by telling people a little bit about the program. You're coming to this after taking a little bit of time on maternity leave. Our kids were not yet in school. Now they are. You're coming back to work. This is really exciting. The new program launches at the end of April. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people can see it. You can find it at skyhouseherbs.com. Enrollment is open now. The course begins. You go under Courses, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship at the end of April. Tell us about it.
Well, this course, I guess my goal in redesigning the apprenticeship course that I've been teaching for 10 years is to make it even more personal and to allow people to study the material, digest it at their own pace. So what it's going to be is a combination of kind of three main parts. The first one is the recorded material. So there's going to be modules that will be released and people can listen to them as they have time. The second part are live classes where we will meet live on Zoom and talk about the module, I'll answer questions, I'll give even more information about it. And then the third part is the sacred plant pairings. And so I've always taught the herbal portion, like the plant diets, one at a time, but this year I'm going to do it in pairs because I think you can learn a lot by comparing and contrasting herbs. So for every module, you'll have two herbs to study and you'll get a little cheat sheet about them before you start the module. And then you'll have an opportunity to work with those two plants and blend them and keep them separate and just really work with them closely. Because my goal is that I want people to be able to find information that they can really use in their own lives, maybe with clients, whether they have a professional herbal practice or maybe they're a therapist in a different field, that they'll know these plants so that they can work with them really comfortably.
I love the different modules that you have, just so we can preview them for people. Module one is Vitalism and the Heart of Herbalism. Module two, Building Your Home Apothecary. They're so diverse. I love module three is my favorite, Plant Spirit Medicine, Energetics and Chemistry. You have such a holistic approach. It's what I've always loved about your teaching. You'll teach about the doctrine of signatures. You'll talk to people about how to communicate with plants, how to think of them as teachers that are living beings, that have personalities that aren't just, phytochemistry or whatever. But you will also teach phytochemistry. And I think that you have this really well-rounded way of helping people be intelligent about the plants, about the body, about the systems of the body, but also not afraid to use energetic systems, not afraid to take something from the kinds of energetics that ancient mystics were working with, whether that's the elements or whether that's, some of the overlay with things like Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. You take what's useful on a symbolic and energetic plane and on a personal connection level with the plants, and you marry it to really smart scientific research. I think that that's rare. You don't see that a lot.
Well, thank you for saying that. To me, it's all language. They're just different languages that we talk about the same thing. And I think the more diverse our languages as herbalists, the more we can reach more people. And that's kind of my goal. Like, I want everyone to like be able to identify plants, use plants. So we need to diversify the languages we speak. So we can talk with our physicians. So we can talk with a therapist. We can talk with a mystic, right? We can talk with children. And we have a language that everyone can use.
You talk in the program, in your modules, you have stuff on digestive and gut health. You have stuff on detoxification, colds and flus, and, you know, dealing with virus seasons. You talk about tissue states, and you're talking about how to give things to your kids for, you know, helping them maybe at times even relax before bed at night. We use a lot of different things with our kids. I love this, that you have called this a, I'm going to find the phrase where you use that you use, and I'm going to mess it up, a community herbalist. What is a community herbalist, so that people can understand that definition? Because sometimes people might look at a course like this and think, gosh, unless I go to an accredited university for, 8 years and learn all about chemistry, I have no right or business suggesting herbs to people or using herbs. That's just not true. And that's not the history of how folk herbal medicine has been used or taught. So what do you mean when you say community herbalist?
I think you said it perfectly. This is the people's medicine, and our grandmothers and great grandparents used plants as medicine. There's nothing actually that like hard about the practice of herbal medicine. It's just getting to know the plants and getting to know the times when they're most useful. I really envision that this course, people can take it and yes, use it for themselves, number one, because I think a lot changes when we have the personal experience, and then using it in your family, whether that's just, you know, maybe making a tea for your dog, or, you know, if you have kids, or maybe you just have a partner, maybe you have plants you can use, and we'll talk about taking care of a garden, but using it for yourself, for whoever's immediately around you, and then taking it beyond that, because it's likely that at some point, you're going to be talking with someone. They're going to say, oh, you know, I've got this digestion thing and I've tried this and this. And they might say, hey, you're studying herbs. Is there anything that you would recommend? And you know what? You'll probably have a few ideas. And that, you know, you never know how one way that you help someone out there in the world might trickle and then help others and more people. So I think through the self-knowledge and studying this knowledge in your own body, it'll naturally, it's like, you know, impossible for it not to spread out and start to affect the broader community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. This is also for that reason, because we have a vision. I mean, you guys know through my Kickstarter, you guys helped us build a community herbal medicine garden that Ashley's been hosting free and donation-based events out of, that the donations go back to right back into the garden and just growing the medicine that we then find ways of harvesting and giving to other people or letting other people come and harvest. We have a vision, we always have, back to the days when we had our yoga studio in Maryland, we have always had a vision of making this sacred knowledge accessible to people. And that is both there in this program in terms of the way you're framing what it means to be an herbalist. It might mean that you're a professional and you see clients and you could continue beyond this program developing the skills to do that. This would certainly set you up for success. You could also go forward and be someone who uses what you know with friends and family and yourself. And that's an incredible set of tools to have. The program's also very accessible from both a programming standpoint and a price standpoint. I'll take you back over and show everybody. The programs, the modules are pre-recorded, but then you meet outside of the modules for discussion, community, Q&A, and sort of development and integration. So people can attend those live. If they miss those integration sessions, they can also watch the replays of those. So
absolutely, yeah.
Anyone could take this at their own rate, you know, as slowly or as quickly as you wanted to, really soak it in, or blaze through it. And, you know, and then we can certainly, beyond this program, as Ashley perhaps makes more advanced programs available as she's easing back in out of maternity leave, can help you with further development or recommend you to many other wonderful programs where you can continue your studies. We want this to be accessible. We want community herbalism to be, you know, as simple as being able to show a friend a couple of yoga stretches. We should be able to show each other herbs, you know, and just, hey, this is a helpful herb to use. Also, accessibility price-wise, we have an early bird enrollment and we have a standard enrollment. And then we have tuition level 1 assistance and tuition assistance level 2, which break out the affordable tuition into different levels of affordability. And you can kind of identify where you're at if you're someone who wants to take this program, but needs to work within your means and not hurt yourself doing it. And then for those who can pay, we ask that you use standard or early bird enrollment. And that's the same thing I do for all my astrology programs. So we try to keep it super, super accessible. The Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. I know Ashley's super excited to be getting back into teaching too. I also would like to offer Ashley just a chance to tell everyone a little bit about, before we end here this interview, tell everyone maybe a little bit about your own background, who you studied with, what your influences are, and just anything else you want to say before we cap it off.
Ooh, okay. well, I think, you know, I started off as a kid playing in the woods, mixing perfumes and potions. And then I went on to study environmental science, where I studied organic chemistry and restoring native wetlands. And really from an environmental perspective, that's how I got into herbalism. And then after, you know, I realized after working on the restoration piece and joining a lot of earth advocacy groups that the problem's not with the earth, but with the people not mm-hmm. understanding the value of the earth. So then I started going into holistic medicine. I graduated from University of North Carolina, Asheville with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I went on to get my, that was my undergrad. And then I got my master's from the Maryland University of Integrative Health. It was then called Thai Sophia. But my teachers there, you know, I had such a great blend of teachers, really scientific minds, like Simon Mills from the UK and Kevin Spellman, who is like a chemistry genius. He's also an Ayurvedic practitioner, studied with Dr. Vasant Lad. Matthew Prisco, medicine maker from Galen's Way out in California. So I had a really wonderful, diverse variety of teachers in that 3-year full-time master's level program. And then after that, I went on to study with Matthew Wood pretty intensively because I liked his energetics. I liked the way he spoke about the plants and his personal experience working with low dose, drop dose medicine. And he has had amazing, he's done such amazing work herbally with just using that method. And I've got a lot of herbalists in my basket.
David Duke comes to mind.
Jim Duke, Margie Flint, Rosemary Gladstar is like, I've only done one herb walk with her, but it was amazing. So, you know, I have shelves of herbal books and people who I just adore. Yeah. And yeah, I just feel really grateful that I've had that blend of the science and the energetic herbalism and the traditional herbalist perspective as well. And I try my best to blend them together and to give everyone a really diverse yet integrated herbal studying experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that. That is exactly what you'll get if you sign up for Ashley's program, which I encourage you to do. If this is the kind of thing that interests you, you won't regret it. It's a fantastic course with someone I absolutely love, obviously, but also like a really, truly fantastic human being and teacher of plant medicine. And if you want to learn more about her, see her work, get to know her a little bit, check out her YouTube channel, Sky House Herbs, where she publishes weekly on plant medicine, plant energetics, and also on Instagram, which is Sky House Herbs. So the apprenticeship program starts April 24th. I wanted to get Ashley on, brag about her program, turn you guys on to it. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure that we're going to see some people from the Nightlight astrology world getting introduced to you and all of your magic.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.